Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
With David Slack this morning. Morena, David, how are you?
I'm never better, and thanks for asking, Rachel.
Oh, that's good to hear.
It's so very positive and cheery. I love
very
it.
Very good to hear.
It's the coffee talking.
We're all mainlining coffee this morning.
I have to say, David made his own coffee at the BFM studios today.
I understand a producer who is scrambling to get her silver scroll material cut together after a late night.
We're working hard out here on the BFM Breakfast Show.
But I love that you've just made yourself at home. It's glorious.
What is BFM if not everybody's home away from home,
exactly.
Really. Hey, we've got lots to talk about. Let's talk climate change first, because it's the topic of our age, really, isn't it? But also, Friday last week, incredible scenes across the world, really. But across New Zealand, we saw an enormous turnout for climate strikes, organised by school kids, but participated in by many, many different kinds of people. What are you feeling about this, David? How's this all making you feel?
Well, just one point first, because you've reminded me that Matt Nippert, who is very good at crunching numbers and getting to hard data, had a hard look at it, and he maintains this is the largest crowd of a protest crowd of any kind ever in New Zealand history. There was a strike in about 1979 that was pretty big, but this and of course there were the Queen Street riots.
Yes,
not the Dave Dobbin ones, the Depression ones, and they had about 20,000 people outside the town hall for that. Now it was a much smaller city in those days, so that was. But you see my point.
I do see your point. Yeah, it was enormous.
And I think that's a genuine expression of genuine concern. And I was kind of frustrated to have conversations after I did a column on Sunday with people who, where I was expressing solidarity with Greta and wondering what the hell was wrong with old people, and you know, making me about the 5 millionth person to say that.
But hey, we still seem to apparently need to keep saying it.
Well, that's
Could
the frustrating thing.
Old men
thing.
Please stop picking on 16-year-old girls. It's just so ridiculous.
And the thing that seemed to me to be the problem here was that older people were taking it personally because of the particular language she used. For God's sake, she's entitled to be emotional about something that potentially changes life as we know it. I think that maybe it pinches some guilty nerve, I don't know. Well, actually, no, maybe that's not it. But there's a misunderstanding there. She's not saying, you personally, I hold you responsible. She's saying, older people, you have the power, you have the means to act decisively or not. And so far, after 30 years, it remains or not.
Mm.
Get your shit together.
Yeah.
Now, what's wrong with that?
I know. And she's not the only person to say it, and she's not the first person to say it. Mm. I was really struck by how remarkably powerful the Pacific voice was at the protests on Friday as well. And of course, it's always been Indigenous people leading the climate protests since the dawn of time, basically. What's something that you'd like to see the government, I guess, do now that we've seen this amazing action? How do we translate that into, I guess, policies or, you know, tangible changes that are actually going to make a difference? Because it's great for target setting, that stuff's all awesome, but how are we going to actually achieve that?
I think there needs to be more power given to the Green Voice on the Zero Carbon Bill. I think there's a kind of a caution still at play here, and you've got to get over that. I get the problem. I get that you've got a coalition of the very willing and the considerably unwilling, unless it's a gold card. and so it's not easy. But Jesus, you've got to push as hard as you can, and I think you've got to maybe be a little more emphatic in rebutting the kind of stuff that Judith Collins is trying to run, and the potential disruption that she might be trying to get from a whole national caucus. Because potentially, if these people actually mean what they say, you've got votes there to get your zero carbon bill across
Absolutely.
The line. Now, if you're going to get a rearguard action over that side, then you've got a problem. So maybe, because this is all an elegant political dance, that's where they need to put a bit more effort on the so-called Blue Greens. Sorry, the so-called Blue Greens in the National Party. In the larger sense, though, I think what they've done with public transport in this term is is the right demonstration of particular will for a particular policy direction that you could accelerate, you know. Yeah. That if you can get carbon fossil fuel burning vehicles off the road, that's very important. If you can work on the methane production here, that's important, because although people will tell you, well, it's only a small impact on the global atmosphere, actually methane is much more harmful, but also you can act more swiftly to get it out. So there's a real incentive there, and we could be, if we're doing what we're so proud of in other aspects of agriculture, leading the world in finding new ways of dealing with this.
Absolutely.
And there's also really interesting work going on in Queensland with a kind of seaweed that is demonstrated to reduce methane emissions in ruminant animals by about 98%.
Wow, that's amazing.
Let's be having more of that.
Yeah.
You know, either you get the seaweed or you reverse engineer to figure out what the hell is the chemistry of that so you can replicate it in the animals. You know, this specific stuff we can do, and they are investing some hundreds of millions in this, but let's have a few hundred million more and a few hundred million more than that.
Yeah.
So I guess my point is, what you're doing is laudable. More of it, please.
That sounds very sensible, David. Let's talk about another massive thing that's been going on. You know, long time, but it's blown up again in the last week. This is the sort of white supremacy and freedom of speech issue that's been happening across the campus at University of Auckland. This is not the first time this year that we've heard about this issue at the University of Auckland. So if people are unfamiliar with what's happened, some posters went up basically advocating for white supremacist sort of language, redirected to a page online with that kind of rhetoric on it. And the Vice Chancellor of the University of Auckland has basically had a non-response to this. He's sort of saying, hands are tied, freedom of speech, blah, blah, blah. And we've just seen, you might have heard in the news as well, that the academics have written an open letter. There's over 250 academics signed on to this, and I think more people are signing on continually, saying, look, this is not on. This is not what universities are for. We do actually have to take a stand. You know, what is this, David? What more do people have to do, I guess, to get universities to say something about this? Slash, also, should they be saying something about this?
To make my position clear, on the way in, I was looking for posters to tear down.
You know? Yes.
I may have said this before, but I'll repeat it once more. I like the analogy that says we make it permissible for people to have knives, but we have laws about how you can use a knife. You can go to prison for using a knife in the wrong way. Speech is the same. These absolutists who say that you must permit people to say any goddamn thing at all, and let's have them express their opinion so that we can rebut it, are being, I think it's a specious argument. It is also an argument as old as ancient Greece. You know, there is an understanding that the freedom of speech can be seen in the way I just argued it, or in that absolutist fashion that David Seymour so loves to embrace. But you have this, I don't know, and it does seem to be in particular males, you have these young males who become so comfortable with this idea, and it seems a kind of weird, unsocialized, and I mean in the sense of not being able to play well with their friends in the sandpit, indulgence. I think they kind of want to make a noise for the sound of their voice. It's weird. I can't believe, you know, I grew up, what was it? It was 15 years after the end of the Second World War when I was born, and I grew up in the shadow of that, hearing about it all the time, because my family and everybody they knew lived through that. And it was beyond question that the most monstrous thing they had ever seen and would ever see was a Nazi regime that would do things that you thought humans were incapable of doing. And that is that kind of supremacist point of view is just so antithetical to everything that is civilized and humane about us that if you're looking for some basis to some place to draw the line between you can use the knife for this but not for that, it's that shit. You know, it is. It's noxious. It's unacceptable. And you know, sometimes officials will say that's above my pay grade to have a an opinion on it. $750,000 a year. You can have an opinion on it.
Yep, I think you might be right there.
Vice Chancellor.
Yeah, and I think it is. It's, you know, I think the thing I find frustrating about it is we've seen the worst. And what more do you need to what people are saying when they say they feel unsafe? And this is a university, you shouldn't have to feel unsafe here. This is somewhere you should be coming to learn and have a great time.
You bet.
Absolutely. Well, that might be all we've got time for this morning, David, but thank you so much for coming in. It's always a pleasure having you in the studio.
Likewise.
And we will see you very soon, I'm sure.
Cheers, Rachel.
Cheers.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
You